being able to ruthlessly prioritize is going to be really important. Just goes with adaptability and curiosity, prioritizing for your time to focus on what matters most and not the nice to have. And it's really difficult to put things down to the bottom of the list, but your learning and your future is kind of top of the list. And that's really important, not only for your career, but actually for you to be a better operator in your current day job. And so when you sort of say, I'm too busy to focus on those things, you're not giving yourself and your job the justice it deserves.
Karina, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am honored to have you on. I know it's going to be such a fantastic, interesting conversation today. But before we dive in to everything that we're going to talk about today, can you give the listeners a bit of an introduction into yourself, your background, and your career journey? So over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Georgie. Looking forward to an interesting conversation. So a little bit about me. Most people actually call me CP. I think if a lot of people call me Karina, then I know that I'm in trouble big time. So you feel free to call me CP, whatever works for you. But if I just a snapshot of my career, about 20 years in banking, which I still think, oh gosh, how is that possible? 20 years in banking. I certainly didn't dream of wanting to be a banker. I accidentally fell into it. I actually studied a professional communication degree at RMIT University here where I'm based in Melbourne. And I was studying things like media and journalism and public relations. And so banking was a little bit far from where I thought I would be. But needless to say, you know, I unexpectedly got into the world of banking. Actually, my mum was working at a bank and got me a part-time job. And I thought, every opportunity to pay down some uni debt, of course. And I just fell in love with it. Sparks started to fly. And I think for me personally, I felt that I could leverage a big brand like a bank who had a lot of influence and a large network in the community and actually do some good. And so I've been really focused on the people aspects of banking, and in particular now leading the business of technology, leading the people of technology. And I think that's a bit of a sweet spot for me. And so I always like to say that, you know, not everybody has to look like a banker. I think the stereotype of a banker has certainly changed, but I've really sort of fallen in love with it over the years because I feel like I can make some meaningful change and impact in a large organization like where I am today at ANZ.
Amazing. Well, 20 years at ANZ, that is quite the journey. Now, I'm always fascinated in people's career journeys because I think that some people still have this maybe slightly outdated view now of what a career should look like, of how you should just be climbing up, up, up. And what I'm starting to notice more is it's more of a zigzag. It's more of, oh, I want to learn more about this. So I'm going to go over here and then I want to go over there. And every single zigzag, you are navigating your way up, but you're acquiring skills in the process. So I'd love to know your career zigzag, your career journey into where you are today, because what's really fascinating is you're working quite heavily in the tech space now, which I really want to go into. But how have you prepared for that role and what skills did you acquire along the way?
Yeah, it's a great question because I like to think of it as a portfolio career, if you like, lots of different things with a lot of transferable skills because you're spot on. You know, back in the day, if you like, if I think about my parents and their generation, it was study something and then kind of work their way up and they would do that for their whole career. For me, it's been the complete opposite. So as I mentioned earlier, I studied communication, focused more on those creative disciplines, media and film and TV production, fell into banking by accident. And in banking, actually, I did a number of different types of roles where I could transfer and apply my skills in different areas. So I started in the HR operations or shared services type space where I was looking after things like onboarding and developing letters of contracts and things like that for employees, through to more of those communication management type roles, helping leaders craft their communication and engagement strategies. So very different from working in that sort of back office operations through to then advising leaders on their communications approach. That was certainly more aligned with what I studied. But then it changed again a couple of years later. You know, you get bored and you want to grow your skills and you want to develop and build your network. And so I moved then into a sort of TV production type role for a bank again. So doing a lot of news reading and helping build community stories of our local customers, running budgets and running the development of that studio. and then moved into the technology space. And for me, that was really around the enablement of technology. How do we deliver projects for our customers? So that is bringing the right people together to deliver the right things at the right time. So that included everything from operations and finance, obviously a bit of HR and people management in there as well. So lots of different things. As you said, a bit of a zigzag. And then you naturally kind of build your career that way. We don't really call it the ladder anymore. It is absolutely the portfolio of careers. And I'm a strong believer that, when you are delivering to an outcome and when you have the trust of your people and the trust of your leaders, good things will happen. The promotion will come, but you've got to take some side steps along the way. And that's been really, really important to me. It's not all about, I'm only going to apply for a role that's a step above or a promotion. I'm actually going to do a sideways step, if you like, to build those new skills and experiences, get those runs on the board before I can expect that next level promotion.
You and I are still on the same page here. This is really, really interesting. And I'm always listening for patterns. So when you were speaking there, I thought you've said some key things. One, communication. Huge. Like, we could definitely want to talk about that. The HR, the people aspects, the operations. You were really sort of like accumulating all these things that have now definitely helped you in your current role today. So I think the key piece that I really want to sort of drive to people listening right now is that I think that we do sort of think about our careers in like this linear fashion still. I think some people still have that mindset. And I think what's coming, especially in the future now with the rise of tech, the rise of AI, is everyone's going to have to actually take a sidestep. No one's going to go up anymore unless you're already quite high up in tech. We're all going to have to kind of navigate this kind of new norm, this new world we're going into. You mentioned transferable skills. What, in your opinion, do you think are some important skills we should all be thinking about in this next sort of like 5 to 10 years? What sort of skills have been really important for you in your career and helped you keep on going to the next level in your career?
Great question. I think we, they're obviously going to be the technical skills that we can speak about. There are I like to call them the power skills, which are the artists formerly known as soft skills. I don't call them soft because they are not soft. They're actually hard skills. But before we sort of get into those, I think most importantly right now in the future of an AI-enabled world where we're going, it really for me is around curiosity and being adaptable. Because when you are curious about the way things are changing and moving and your role and what that means for the future, you will learn more, you will be open to learning, you'll be more adaptable. And it's going to take those people who are adaptable and can go with the flow a little bit and understand that maybe the role I'm doing today might not necessarily be the role I'm doing in the future. And that's okay. And so being flexible and that adaptability is going to be paramount, more important than any other skill you can learn from a training course or a textbook or going and doing a conference. I think ultimately that is something that you can't necessarily learn, but you've got to be open-minded about. So I think it is those sort of T-shaped skills around growth mindset and being open to the future. That's going to be really, really important in a world where AI is impacting every single industry and impacting every single role. And then, of course, if we think about, very specific skills, knowing enough to be dangerous is what I like to talk about when it comes to technical skills. We're not all technologists by trade. I'm certainly not a technologist by trade, but I like to know enough to be dangerous. So in the future of AI, in the future of this sort of a rapidly advancing technology landscape, we all need to understand enough to be dangerous. What does AI mean? What is machine learning? How do algorithms kind of get defined and developed? What does that mean for us in terms of the outcomes for our customers and for our community? And you don't need to be an expert. You certainly don't need to be a software developer, but those sort of foundational AI or technical skills are going to be really important. So learn a little bit about AI and machine learning so that you can understand what it means to build and train a model. Cybersecurity is going to be really important. Again, not all of us are expected to be cyber experts, but we do have to understand that as we get more digital, we're more in the technology space, we're going to be impacted by a number of different cyber threats. And so we need to know enough about that. And then data literacy is another really important one. you can't build AI, you can't do AI without understanding your data, cleaning your data, and understanding what that means in terms of building outcomes for customers. So there's sort of like the top sort of level technical skills. And I think I sort of touched on adaptability and power skills, as I like to call them. Mindset is going to be really, really important. And I think ultimately that sort of collaboration and communication with people to be able to work towards these solutions in the future. The more people you build in your network, the more you learn from them, you know, the better that's going to be for you and for your career.
No, I everything you've just said then I just speak about all the time as well. So you've literally just ticked everything that I always say. So it's just it's so nice when I hear these things as well, because I think the more people say it, the more it's going to start really sinking in. The biggest thing that I hear from people right now, like, we all are very busy. We all have full lives. And I was having a conversation with a female the other day, and she was saying to me, you know, Georgie, I know I need to learn all these new skills. I know I need to invest time, but I'm just too busy. So how do you personally find the time to upskill, reskill, learn these things? Do you set aside an amount of time per week? Like, what does it look like to you? Because I know how important this is, and I don't want to see women especially use the busy card as an excuse not to actually take the right actions. We need to make this important in our lives. So how do you personally do it?
Yeah, it's a really good call out, because I think the too busy card is a bit of an excuse, if I'm being honest. The thing is, you're never going to have enough time in the day to do your day job. Like, there is so many things you could be doing. I'm going to finish today on a Monday afternoon and say, oh my gosh, I still have 6 different packs I need to develop, and I need to review this, and I need to do that. That's still going to continue tomorrow. And so being able to ruthlessly prioritize is going to be really important. I should have called that out as a skill, because I think that's really important. Just goes with adaptability and curiosity, prioritizing your time to focus on what matters most and not the nice to have. It's really difficult to put things down to the bottom of the list, but your learning and your future is kind of top of the list. And that's really important, not only for your career, but actually for you to be a better operator in your current day job. And so when you sort of say, I'm too busy to focus on those things, you're not giving yourself and your job the justice it deserves. So I try to do a few things. I try to block out time in my diary specifically. So I have breathing space in my diary, but also have development time, and things are color-coded. I'm a bit obsessive in that way. So I've got like purple for my personal development, and I've got like grays, a bit of breathing space in between meetings. And I make sure that I always have some time in between meetings, even if it's just for that refresher break, or actually just to read the latest article on a particular topic that I'm following. I will always do a LinkedIn scroll every night, just to see what people are saying in my particular industry when it comes to things like AI. So I've got enough about kind of what was the latest news today in that particular space. So, and that's just a quick scroll while I'm on the couch before I put on Netflix. I'm just scrolling through to see what's, you know, what are the topics of the day. And then Friday morning is usually my time where I can do a little bit of research. I subscribe to a few things that, you know, that really drive me. And I also use a lot of generative AI tools to give me the latest information. You know, gone are the days where you'd use a ChatGPT and it was only giving you data from 2021, right? It's now really, really well up to date, and you can get a lot of information. So often I'll use a tool like that to say, what are the 3 things I need to know when it comes to building an enterprise-wide literacy program for AI? And I'll get ideas and I'll brainstorm with AI quite often. And actually, I will use AI tools daily as part of my job, daily as part of brainstorming and reviewing comms and things like that. But I also use it for that research component as well, which is really helpful for people, for all of us who are time poor. So ruthlessly prioritize, focus on the most important, deprioritize the nice to haves. And, you know, you've got to do what works for you, I suppose, but it's really important that you do make the time.
Yeah, I think it's just such a powerful message and reminder to everyone, is that no one's coming to, you know, do the work for you. You have to take responsibility for your own career, and it's becoming more and more important, especially if we want to stay ahead in the new world, and we want to continue to be recognized and continue to get that next sort of step up in whatever organization that we are. I'm curious, and obviously you don't sort of give away anything you're not allowed to say, but in terms of like ANZ, one of the biggest companies, brands in Australia right now, what, and again, obviously I know you've got to be careful what you say, but how are they thinking about this? Because a lot of businesses that I'm speaking to, so I run a tech recruitment company, so they're very, a lot of them are very tech enabled, but they're basically saying to me, you know, we're having AI agents in our org chart now. Every new employee has to have some kind of level of AI literacy. They have to at least understand how it works. What's ANZ's thought process on this? How is ANZ preparing its staff and its people to navigate the change that's coming? What can you share?
Yeah. Well, there's a few things there. I think it's really important that companies are not just standing back and watching. And the great thing about ANZ is we didn't just stand back and look at all those, you know, things that were happening in the media and look at all the latest AI introduction and say, we're not going to do anything. We actually started experimenting. And so we really encouraged our people to start experimenting with care and thinking about how they would integrate AI into their business plans. And so as we matured that and more people understood it and built their confidence with AI, we've now moved to more of an approach where it's focused on informed innovation. So rather than everybody going to experiment just for the sake of it and looking at the sexiest tools on the market, it's actually about really aligned business priorities. So we're shifting that focus from experimenting and kind of learning about everything to actually let's focus on the most important things for our company, for our customers, and for our people. And so really maturing that approach around where are we going to get the biggest bang for our buck? Where are we going to achieve value? One of the biggest or most important things for ANZ has been around the literacy agenda. And so all the research that we've done around how companies get value from AI all points to one thing, and that is really around the workforce, the workforce's ability to understand the fundamentals of AI and their readiness to change. And so when we look at this research in particular, it was actually some Gartner research, and they interviewed a bunch of CEOs all around the world and said, what is your number one most important outcome when it comes to AI? And they all said one thing: the most important objective or outcome for AI was getting return on investment, ROI. What was the biggest barrier then? What was getting in your way getting that return on investment? And what the research tells us is it's actually a lack of a well-designed AI literacy strategy. So what that means is if your employees, your workforce isn't scaled up to learn about AI, to build their confidence and awareness of what that means, and not only just understand the fundamentals, but actually understand what it means for me in my day job, and then how do I apply it to rewire my business processes or build strategic solutions that are going to give us return on investment in the future. And so we've designed an AI literacy program that does that, helps equip our people with the right skills and knowledge to build their AI literacy across the organization. And that's for everybody, 55,000 of our people all around the world. We're on a journey to upskill them in this area of AI enablement. And one of the important things we've done on that agenda is building an immersion center. And that is really around the start of a conversation to get people on that same or equal playing field, if you like, when it comes to AI.
Amazing. That actually brings me nicely onto the next question that I had, because I saw on your LinkedIn that you were sort of part of this AI immersion. I was like, that is so interesting. And I feel like every single company should be really thinking like this. So in practice, like, it sounds fantastic in theory, but what does it really look like? What does it look like behind the scenes?
It's funny because a lot of people would come into this immersion center space and expect to see floor to ceiling, visual displays and robots and all that stuff. It's like, that is not what AI is about. You know, it's really around supercharging you as a human to do your job better and to kind of, you know, make things that were once kind of impossible to automate those things, right? So we bring people into a physical space. We've got spaces here in Melbourne, but also in Bangalore in India, and in both Auckland and Wellington in New Zealand, and soon to be in the Philippines, in Manila. And what we do is we bring our people through a space in small groups of about 20, and we have a conversation. We actually have a facilitated conversation where people are nice and relaxed, sitting on a couch, and we're talking about their current level of understanding and confidence when it comes to AI. And what that does for me as a host or for my fellow hosts who are facilitating those conversations, it helps us assess where they're at in their AI journey. And then we sort of tailor the session as we go through the program. It's a 2-hour session, essentially, where they have that conversation up front. They see some real examples of how we're building AI into the business. So we show them a few videos and some live demos of AI in the business that they can see and go, oh, okay, now I understand what it means when you automate or process documents. What does that actually mean? How might that help me in my business? We then get them to come and sit in what I call the classroom or the boardroom, if you like, where we teach them how to prompt like a pro. And so we're teaching them the fundamentals of prompt engineering. Us technologists, we talk about that like it's some fancy term. It's basically, you know, the key ingredients you need to know to be able to get better outcomes from your chosen tool when it comes to AI. So what are you trying to achieve? What's the goal? What are your expectations in terms of what you want that, you know, how you want that outcome to be presented? What's the source? So do you want internal or external data? And what's the context? Why do you need it? And so we teach people those four fundamental ingredients of a good prompt. And then we get them to take all that learning and put it into action by creating a product. Right. So we get them to use Copilot, a Microsoft tool, and we get them to think about how they might create ANZ's next best banking product with the help of Copilot using the key ingredients of a good prompt. So that's what it's about.
I just love that on a few levels. Number one, this word keeps on coming up and it's called transparency. The biggest fear that I'm sensing in the marketplace right now from the candidate side is the lack of transparency in the organization. They're not being told by their leaders what their job's going to look like, how the business is thinking about integrating AI. So they're just sort of sitting there being like, am I going to have a job in this company in 2 years' time? What I love about what ANZ's doing and you're doing is that you're actually sort of showcasing this is how the business is currently using AI. Then on top of that transparency, you're then actually helping people upskill by getting better prompt engineers and becoming actually great users of AI and really understanding how to actually use it effectively, and then empowering them to come up with some really, really good ideas. And from that, the bank could come up with a whole other, you know, new product line or new way of doing something. I think it's so good. And it's such a good example of how businesses could be bringing their people on the journey as opposed to just shutting them out, making all the decisions in the boardroom and everyone's panicking, scratching their head, being like, what's actually going on? Do I have a job in this company in 2-3 years' time? So I think it's really amazing. And I love hearing it because it gives me the sense of calm to be like, oh, okay, there's businesses out there, big businesses out there that are having a people first approach with this, which is just so wonderful to hear.
I think though, Georgie, one of the important elements here is though, our role here is to lead the horse to water, so to speak, to equip our people with the tools. But ultimately, we as individuals, we have to kind of be able to put two and two together and think about my role. What does that mean? Because I think often people are relying and waiting for the answers from their leaders or from their teams or their business units. And sometimes the answers aren't there. Sometimes we don't know what the answers are going to be. But I say, you know, put yourself into your own driver's seat. Think about your career and what you want to do next, what skills you want to learn. All of this is around leading the horse to the water, right? And then you're then empowered to work through what that means for you. An example, you know, this was way before kind of we had basic AI, but we didn't have generative AI. When I was doing communication type roles, I was advising leaders on their communication strategies and we were writing press releases and we were doing all the, you know, write the scripts and write the speeches. And I very quickly realized that that role in a way was being disrupted, that you could start to get, you know, with the rise of social media at the time, everyone was self-authoring their own comms. It was less about 7-8 different approvers on a communications message and more about genuine, authentic communications, you know, not moderating every single Q&A in an event. And so I saw that those roles that I was doing as a comms manager would probably be disrupted at some point. And I kind of made a decision to pivot and learn different areas because I could see where things were going. And I don't want to sort of stick around to go, I'm now redundant. I actually want to kind of get ahead of the curve. And I think it's the same with AI. No one's going to tell you that your role doesn't exist just yet. Like people are still working through what that looks like. You take the time and be empowered to go, if generative AI can do 80% of what I'm doing today, then maybe I should kind of focus on the human in the loop piece, the validation, the critical thinking, the problem solving, the underlying ethical considerations, you know, and to kind of stretch and move into another area. But it's really important for people to own that and not wait to be told or wait for their leader to find the answers. I think it's better if you're being very proactive. And if you, success to me is me turning around to my boss and saying, I've actually made myself redundant in a way. I'm moving on to the next thing. I can now automate this. Can you help me work on that next role? I think that's a more positive conversation.
I am with you absolutely, because I do fear that there's too many people that are burying their heads in the sand and waiting for their leader or waiting for their employer. Not everyone's going to have the same employer like ANZ that's doing this training and really sort of empowering their people. So for those listening to this right now that are not an organization that feel like they're slowly being left behind, what sort of, I guess, if there's a couple of things that you would recommend somebody do right now to just, and that could be using some tools, it could be really sort of, I guess, maybe trying to be more visible. I don't know, but any advice you'd have for somebody right now that's concerned about where they can see maybe their job going, what advice would you have for that person?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think ultimately it's about you taking control and you shifting your mindset around, if you're not already thinking in this way. So rather than think about someone's going to come and help me or solve this for me, you may have great mentors and sponsors who've got your back. It's about shifting that to say, what can I do to take control and be really proactive in this situation? And if I don't know exactly what AI means for me in my current role, well, use a generative AI tool to bounce some ideas. I do this all the time. So I might be preparing for an event and there's a really tricky question that's come up and I've got a seed of an idea, but I need help to really flesh that out. It's not unlike me to use a ChatGPT or a Copilot to say, here's my initial thinking. What else could I be considering? Help me kind of brainstorm this as I go through this. And so you might actually ask the question, this is an example, I might be a HR analyst building contracts today. I think generative AI can probably help me with some of this stuff in the future. What are some of the things I should be looking out for? What are some of my transferable skills, you know, to help me kind of work through that? Upload your resume, you know, with all your previous experience and get the tool to almost be a virtual career advisor for you. I'm doing a lot of that and I'm finding it's getting better and better. And I'm using it as if I'm talking to a human, it's free of judgment, you know, which is really positive. And so it will help you build some confidence as well in your own skills. But I would say mindset is number one most important thing. If you're waiting for someone to come and save the day for you, that's not the right approach. You really need to be proactive, be open, ask questions. If you haven't already got a mentor, that's going to be really important. And then finally, this notion of sponsorship, I think, is really important. And sponsorship or having a sponsor is very different to having a mentor. A mentor helps coach you and educate you and gives you feedback and learning, all of that great stuff. But a sponsor is someone who will drop your name in a boardroom when it matters. So it might be Karina's role, it might be impacted tomorrow because of this kind of generative AI thing that's coming, but Karina's got really great skills at XYZ. Have you thought about her for that project? And so you just can't underestimate the power of having a good sponsor, but you can't ask someone to be a sponsor unless you've got some runs on the board, right? And you've built a bit of trust. So there's a bit of work for you to do behind the scenes to get that ready.
Mm-hmm. So good. And side note, I'm actually writing a book at the moment. It's called The Bold Move, and it's all about future-proofing your career in the age of AI. And in the book, I talk about leadership and I talk about sponsorship and how important it is. And you said something very, very important then. You said it's not, you just don't go up to a sponsor and say, hey, can you be my sponsor? You've actually got to prove that you're worth sponsoring. How have you gone about doing this? I think one of the key pieces that I always say to people is you have to be visible, right? Like you have to put yourself in the situations, go for the stretch products and projects, put your hands up in the rooms, showcase what you can do, do your job really, really well, focus on your skills, focus on your strengths. But how have you gone about getting your sponsors throughout your career? Any advice about sort of getting a good sponsor?
Well, for me, it's often been around, you don't necessarily know who all your sponsors are. So you can certainly ask for a sponsor. But as you said, you've got to have all the right things in place, the trust and the runs on the board and all that stuff. But often when you're doing a really good job at something and you're a really strong performer, you've got sponsors and you just don't even know it, right? They're the people who, without you knowing, they have mentioned your name and they've got your back. You will know who they are because you kind of, the universe kind of just works that way. And then once you know who they are, then it's a matter of feeling comfortable enough to actually just ping them and say, hey, I saw that role that you've got on offer or that your colleague has on offer. I'm going to apply. When I apply, can you do your thing, right? Can you be my sponsor? And usually it's, of course, 100% I'll do it for you, right? Because they're kind of already acting as your sponsor, but it's been a little bit unofficial. So the point of that story is it doesn't always have to be an official sponsor that has a title that you're meeting every month or every week. Often for me, what's worked well is the informal sponsors. When it matters and when it counts, that's when I'll reach out to them. I will not kind of ask for a half an hour coffee every week. I just don't want to, you know, take up too much of that time. I want it to matter most, you know, in those moments of impact. And so that's what's worked really well for me. But you have to have that network and that visibility. And it's not always about look at me. It's about being able to identify the impact, the outcome, you know, that you've made, and the value for the organization or the value for that individual. That's when you will get sponsors lining up to kind of have your back and to speak about you in, you know, in closed rooms and closed doors. I always come back to there's a video, an interview, I think it was with Barack Obama, and he was being interviewed about kind of successful careers and what do you remember in when it comes to talent, who are the people you remember most at work? And he said, I remember the people who forget what their job was to do, whatever their job description said. I remember the people who said, I can get that done for you. Leave it with me. I'll get that done. And it's those kind of people, right, that tend to have the sponsors lining up to have their back and to support them. The people who didn't go, that's not in my job description. I'm not going to do that. Right? Those days are dead. Those days are gone. It's those people who will get the job done in the right way, of course, not doing anything, not you know, at all costs or anything like that, but actually go out and get the job done and provide value in a way that your leader or your company expects what's going to actually contribute to that company, not what you think, right? It's about having that two-way alignment and that conversation. And if it doesn't align with your values, then it's time to move on.
Yeah, perfectly said. I think the days of quiet quitting and bare minimum Mondays are well and truly gone. If you want to, if you want to have a job in 5 years' time, because like you say, it's going to, you want to have your name mentioned in the boardroom, you know, when the next restructure happens or whatever's going to go on over the next 5 years, and your sponsors are going to be the ones that advocate for you.
Yep.
I just want to come back to something you've mentioned a few times, this word mindset, because I didn't just want to brush over it because I think it's so important. So any habits that you do daily that get you in the right state? Because I think when we're in the right state of mind, that's when we create our best work. That's when we show up in the workplace as our best selves. That's when we lead the best. Anything you do to really get yourself in that right headspace every day?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things is when you're working with people of different styles, you can easily get frustrated with people. You know, I'm just trying to put this into a really practical example. And often we react very quickly. And so the first thing you might do is respond back to Georgie, as per my email below, I clearly said that rather than actually step away and be a little bit more aware about what's going on and having a bit more empathy about where's Georgie coming from? What was going on in your day, or what are the pressures that you've got that somebody's kind of going, I need this today. I needed this yesterday. And so rather than reacting, for me, when it comes to mindset and putting this into a really practical way, is actually stepping away, is stepping back and being a bit more aware about how I'm reacting in this situation and not reacting straight away to that individual or to that particular problem or that challenge, but taking a moment, just a quick moment, to assess the situation and to kind of think about everybody else in the situation. It also comes back down to listening more. Don't be the first person to speak in every single meeting, because, you know, no one likes a know-it-all. They like a learn-it-all, like someone who's going to learn and observe and then have an opinion or a perspective. So for me, that growth mindset, the way I put that into practice, the habits that I do, is stepping away a little bit to go, what could I have done better, or what might be going on in George's life, or all of those types of things. And it's the same when you get feedback. We talk a lot about how feedback is really important. It's so important for your growth, but nobody likes to get bad feedback. For me personally, I've built this habit around, I want the feedback now in the moment, because I know it's coming from a place of love or a place of goodness. You just want to see me grow and you want to give me feedback on how I made you feel in that situation. So I actually take that as a win. It takes a lot of practice and an open mind to actually not get peed off about bad feedback. A lot of people just get so frustrated by it. And then that's why people are so scared to give feedback, because it hurts. It hurts people. And so being able to build a habit to go be more accepting, to be more aware, to step away from the situation and think about the patterns. I think you mentioned patterns. If this has come up a couple of times, then obviously there is a pattern. There's something I could learn from this. And so that for me is some of the practical ways that I try to build that mindset. Again, it's not something you can read in a book. There's a number of different things, and we learn along as we go. And I'm going to be a different person in 12 months' time, because I'm going to have new experiences and new people that I work with and all of those things that are going to impact and help me build that mindset. But really important to step back and be a bit self-aware and aware of others, I think.
Yeah, I do think self-awareness is going to become increasingly more important. And that word empathy as well, like really trying to understand it from someone else's perspective and understand that, everyone's going to learn this as quickly or adopt this as quickly. So yeah, it's so important. But look, you've achieved so much, Karina, in your career so far. What's next for you? Like, what are you excited about? What are you working on right now? Like, where do you see your career zigzagging over the next sort of few years?
Well, that's a tough one, but that's exactly it, the zigzag. I'm really open to sort of what's next. For me, it's not about a specific role in a specific company or that job. For me, it's around where I can have the biggest impact. And so I will look at opportunities around the contribution I can make, the values and the alignment of where I am now in my career, that I'm looking for those things where I can have enterprise-wide impact, where I can help people and lead teams and engage high-performing teams and rally people around a shared purpose. But for me, it's not about a role title or anything like that. It's actually about where I'm going to develop new skills. I'm going to continue to build a network, and I'm going to be able to have meaningful contribution in the company. I think that's what's going to be important for me, purpose-led leadership. But to your point, zigzag, we don't know what the next zig or the zag is, right? We just got to, for me, I kind of go with the flow. I know though that, within about 2 to 3 years in each role, I start to get to that point of I'm ready for the next transformation or ready for the next impact. I'm the kind of person that I get bored with the BAU. I like to empower my team to keep the lights on, and there are people who love doing that. And that's exactly what we need. But I like to, once I've established something and built the foundations, kind of continue with the next kind of transformation. And so they're the types of things that I continue to look for, and that give meaning to me personally.
I love that. I think that's so important. It's too many people I speak with, especially in recruitment, tie a lot of sense of worth into the job that they do, the job title. Oh, this is the title I want next. It's like, yeah, but what impact do you want to make? What meaning do you want to get? What new skills do you want to acquire? What kind of team and people do you want to work with? Don't get hung up on the job title, because that's going to keep on changing. Goodness knows what the job titles of the future are going to be. Like, I wouldn't even try and attempt to write them down now. But look, final question. When I speak to people like yourself, you communicate so well. You come across as so sure of yourself, confident, and it's just wonderful to listen to and wonderful to be around. I've called this podcast Career Confidence for a reason, because I do believe it's the foundations that everything else is built on. When we have trust and belief within ourselves, we can make that next step. We can go for the promotion. We can put our hands up. We can go and ask for a sponsor. What advice would you have for somebody that's not feeling confident right now? How have you built your career confidence, and what do you continue to do when, if you do get any imposter syndrome come up, like how do you approach it?
We all get it. That's the thing. I think often people will see confident people and go, they're so confident. They know everything. They have all the answers. And that is absolutely not right. I think every person in some way, shape or form suffers throughout their career with imposter syndrome. You know, we don't always have all the answers, and that's okay. And so knowing that first and foremost is really helpful, because when you look around, you go, oh, they're just having the same challenge that I'm having, or they don't know that either. Or, you know, I've been in rooms where it sounded like everybody knew what they were talking about, all the tickies, you know, they were all talking about all the stuff. And then when I actually did the research to break it down, I was like, oh, is that all they're talking about? Is that what they mean? And it was so basic and it's so simple. Maybe I oversimplified it, but I was like, I can do that. I can learn that. And so again, I come back to that and I use this a lot. You just have to know enough to be dangerous. Now, we're all experts in our trade in some way, which is excellent, but there are going to be other things that you don't know, and that's okay. If it's important for your job to know, you know, the basics, learn enough to be dangerous so you can have a really meaningful conversation with somebody. And it's okay to go, you know what? I don't know the answer to that question, Georgie. Let me come back to you. Like that example we use with the, you know, around how you remember successful people and the people in your career. It's the people who said, I'll come back to you, leave it with me. And then you come back and you show them, oh, okay, she can learn that, she can do that. Use Gen AI as your friend here. We have got, for the first time ever in, you know, really human history, tools that can supercharge our learning. And so if there's ever anything you don't know, I ask the question. And sometimes I'm embarrassed to ask this question at work. It might be about what's the difference between these two regulatory bodies, right? And I'm supposed to be an expert at this stuff. I will ask AI sometimes to help me frame what does that mean, okay? Help AI help you ask really interesting questions in a podcast or answer questions on a panel and things like that. Use it as your friend. You're not cheating. You're actually just augmenting your skills, and you are, I mean, it's your co-pilot. That's why it's called co-pilot. It's not your autopilot. So again, know enough to be dangerous. Understand that everybody's absolutely fighting the same battle. Like we all suffer from imposter syndrome at all levels of our career. And you don't just kind of get to this point where you're an executive and then all of a sudden it disappears. You just become more confident with not knowing. That's all. You become more vulnerable and you're okay with that to say, hey, I don't know. Don't look at me. I don't have all the answers. That's why I hire you. I hire smarter people than me because they make us look good and they're brilliant at what they do. I don't pretend to be and to know all the answers. And so that would be my advice. Understand that we're all fighting the same battle. Know enough to be dangerous. And Gen AI is your friend at these times of need.
Absolute gold. That's so going to be the title for the podcast, by the way. Know Enough to be Dangerous.
I love it.
I think that's fantastic. Karina, CP, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you. There's so many things that I've taken away as well. And you've been so honest. You've been so insightful. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom. I know a lot of people are going to feel really empowered. That's how I always want to let people feel when they listen to this podcast, empowered, inspired to take action and get behind the driver's seat of their own life and career. So where can I send people to find out more about you, to connect? And where can I send people? Where do you hang out the most?
I think LinkedIn is probably the safest bet. Look me up, Karina Parasala. CP, of course, you can find me on LinkedIn, but it'd be great to keep the conversation going. And thank you, Georgie, for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.